Hi there, this is Melissa McBride, and I play Carol on The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Girl.
Hello, everybody. This is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
And I'm The Walking Dead Girl. You're listening to The Walking Dead Girl, episode 136. In this podcast, we review and discuss the hit TV show, The Walking Dead from AMC. In addition to reviewing the show, we play listener feedback, so join the conversation.
So if you want to give us feedback, send email to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And you can also post a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thewalkingdeadgirlpodcast, and we routinely read feedback. And we play sometimes voicemails of yours on the show.
Before we get started, I want to remind you that we will be discussing every gory detail about the TV show. So obviously there will be spoilers. So make sure you watch the current episode before listening. I did not expect this episode to go the way it did and to be focused on Ezekiel the whole time. I can't say I was upset, but I was surprised at the ending. Like I thought there was more.
This episode was focused on one group. And we had to find out eventually because through the previous couple of episodes, they were cutting away to them, but never showing them really in any danger, right?
Yeah.
So now we see a big battle and they lost a lot.
It was interesting because I always liked Ezekiel because he kind of took the acting part of it. But when everything was said and done, it was just acting. And when the reality hit and his like method went wrong, it was just like, oh my god, I have to deal with all of this now. Like he had everyone convinced, and because he lied or it was being fake, it cost them their lives. And that's like acting like too real. So because in acting it's like, oh, who cares, it's not like anyone's gonna die. But in this case everyone does die because of the persona and the character he's playing.
This episode shows the transformation of Ezekiel. I mean, the true Ezekiel, right? Who he really is. And
yeah,
because he was portraying this character. And then eventually, you know, that character faded away and the true Ezekiel came through.
I thought like the cold open was him initially, like from the past. But then I realized he's just getting ready for... I liked the back and forth as well.
Not too much of it, but enough to...
But enough to make you feel something.
To contrast, yeah. The opening scene, which we'll talk about, had a lot of contrast to the ending. Mm-hmm. It kind of bookended it that mm-hmm. way. And showed, you know, the before and after of various characters, how they were before and then how they ended up. Basically focusing, like, on the Ezekiel character and all that. And also a surprise little section with... Daryl and Rick.
Yeah.
A little mini action scene there.
it was like a side quest.
Some criticisms I would have are, you know, the same criticisms always on The Walking Dead is some of the action is not really believable. Like it's, you know, some of the guns don't behave realistically.
That's your thing, huh?
Well, the guns don't behave realistically. And this episode specifically had a really sore spot. In that when the guy with the heavy machine gun was on the back of the truck shooting at Rick's Jeep, all we saw was like little sparks off the Jeep and like nothing was, no huge damage, you know?
Right. And the same thing for Carol when she was getting fired at. There was already holes in the truck, but there was no holes being made.
No new holes and...
I saw that you put, because I got an email and I saw that you put an edit, like you added something to the IMDb page for that episode.
How did you see that?
Because I got an email.
Why are you getting emails from IMDb?
We're processing your request because I have the Walking Dead Girl email as well.
Oh, did I log in as the Walking Dead Girl? That's weird.
Yeah. And I was like,
anyway, because I was
like, wow, Dad, you're really dedicated to making sure like this show gets the detail. I mean, that's what we do. We analyze the show. So to put in the goof, the one you just mentioned, right?
We'll mention our you know, goof in the set. Because I think I was the only one that found it. Maybe other people saw it too, but I just found it was a kind of a little weird thing. And I only noticed it after watching it the second time, but you'll have to listen to this podcast to the very end to find out what it is. But it was something that I noticed, and I put it in the IMDb entry for this episode because I thought, hey, let me make my first contribution to the community. Yeah, so I logged into IMDb under my Facebook profile, so I must have kind of linked up a different one. I don't know, whatever. So let's walk in through this episode and see all the hidden messages and kind of the visuals. By the way, this episode was directed by Dan Liu, which is a first-time director on The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's been other first-time directors before, but this one is of note because he used to be an editor, or he probably still is, an editor on The Walking Dead.
Oh!
So he's edited a bunch of episodes, like over 10 episodes, but he was never a director. So we're reaching the point of The Walking Dead series where they're just picking people from the crew and said, hey, do you want to direct? Yeah, go ahead. Do you want to direct? Yeah, sure, go ahead.
People are making their power moves.
Next thing you know, one of the actors will start directing. Maybe Andrew Lincoln will start directing or whatever.
Well, that's a thing because I remember in The Vampire Diaries, the Salvatore brothers, they would take turns sometimes directing. And they're like the stars of the show, but they would direct an episode or two.
So that's interesting. But anyway, Dan Liu is an editor. And because he has experience in editing, we noticed some obvious editing / directing kind of tricks that he used to kind of contrast different scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll point them out when we see them. Here in the cold open, we see a scene that probably is close to your heart, where he's in the mirror and getting ready to be the king.
Like he's putting on his costume for the big show.
Literally, right? He's putting on his makeup, kind of, sort of. And we see that before, when he approaches the mirror, he's just, like in the title, some guy.
Yeah.
He's just some guy, and he just slowly transforms, and he's looking in the mirror. After he finishes transformation, he's the king. And he has to put on his coat, his long coat, which has no practical purpose other than being cool.
Right.
He puts the feather in his hair.
And you notice that he loses the jacket halfway through the episode?
Right. At the end, like, the other character takes his jacket off and he loses it. So that's another symbolic thing, like, ooh, the emperor's losing
his costume.
Yeah, his emperor's losing his clothes. So a lot of meticulous care preparing for the big day, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he puts on this red feather, which, by the way, red is the color of their armbands as well. Peter Pan, the character Peter Pan, also has a red feather in his cap. And it could symbolize something there where, you know, Peter Pan was a fake warrior in this Neverland. And he thought he was invincible and stuff and he would never die. So perhaps this is kind of a calling to that, mirroring of that character. And then we see scenes of each person saying goodbye to their family.
Yeah, it's not interesting. That's why I think that made this episode really good, because even though we don't know most of the members in his army, but they make us feel something for them because they establish that they have families and that they have people that they're looking out for, and knowing that they're not going to come back. And we already know what happened. We already know that everyone is dead. So to see I watched the episode with my friend and I was just like, oh man, this hurts. This hurts a lot.
And Daniel, I think, was one of your, not favorite, but I think you liked him because you said he was cute, whatever. Because he was one of the guys that was first introduced to us. Remember when Carol and Morgan turn around and they see these guys on horses?
Yeah.
Daniel was one of the guys that showed up first. Mm-hmm. So Daniel symbolizes kind of the warrior. Alvaro, who eventually gets shot in the back, is kind of the son because he says goodbye to his father. We see a female, which we never really saw before, but I guess she symbolizes the mother because she's saying goodbye to her kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then the son, or the child, puts flowers in her arm. And then later we see that as symbolized later on.
Yeah, because she's dead. She turned into a walker and you can see her armband or like the flower.
Yeah, they focus on it. And then those flowers then become flowers for her grave.
Jesus, Dad.
Then we see like another guy with a father saying goodbye to his wife and baby, and he dies later on.
They all die.
And then Ezekiel.
So we established.
Ezekiel looks down approvingly to his community, like, oh, these people, he's smiling, right?
They're all going to fight for me, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of contrast from this beginning to the end where Ezekiel is happy and smiling, and he's upbeat, And he even talks to Henry, which is Benjamin's brother.
Right. And he says, "Fear not, young Master Henry. We will be brave because you are brave." And like very, and it's a stark contrast to when he comes back and he's the only one with Carol and Jerry. And, you know, and he doesn't even look at him. They don't even, he doesn't say anything. And he walks away back like, "I'm going to take a shower," because he feels defeated. And then the people already, I felt like their reaction, they're like, "Aren't you going to explain what happened? Like, why aren't you going to, what happened to all the," I'm like, I could just see the destruction of the kingdom already.
Yeah, it's going to have a deep impact to Ezekiel's relationship with the kingdom and all of that. And it's interesting to see how that plays out. And as I mentioned with the editing, we see the scene where Ezekiel puts his arm on the shoulder of Henry. At the end, they duplicated that scene exactly where he comes back and he puts his hand on the shoulder, but he doesn't say anything this time. Just like silence, yeah. Silence, right? He doesn't say anything.
He has nothing to say. Yeah, he has nothing to say.
Ezekiel makes a huge speech but at the end, he doesn't make any speech. He doesn't say anything, period. He has nothing to say. And I'm curious that because he doesn't say anything, does that mean that, of course he doesn't say anything because he's defeated, but also it could be because he's not ready to reveal his true self because he can't speak in that,
yep,
in that king-like voice anymore.
Right, no. He doesn't believe it.
Yeah. So if he says a word, it'll be in his real voice and the people will be like, "What? Who are you now?
What?" Yeah.
"What happened to you?"
I mean, because he also made all these promises too to bring everybody back alive.
Right. So it could mean that he's not ready to speak in his real voice, so he'd rather not say anything.
Right.
So it's interesting to see if he changes back to his normal self.
Well, how will people react? They may be supportive. They may be like, you know, "I understand. Like, we all knew that it was a lie, but it was a lie that got us through a lot." Or they might just think like, "How could you, blah, 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 blah. I thought you were this," accusatory stuff.
How could deceive us, you know?
Right. Oh, Dad, is that a new shirt?
Yes, I'm wearing a new shirt.
Oh, wow. It's like a Henley shirt, right? Like those button up. Wow. Look at you being all hip and rugged looking.
Okay.
No, you have to leave it unbuttoned. I just was like surprised. I've never seen you wear it. All you wear is like t-shirts. Ah, this new body. Hi, you're working out all the time. You're like, "Oh, I gotta show off my chest hair."
Okay. that's uncomfortable.
All right. I gotta make fun of you, Dad.
So you're saying that they might be accepting, or they might be like, yeah, accepting and like, "Well, we knew it was a lie, but it was fine with us."
Because it helped.
We kind of see that a little bit with Jerry, right? Because he's like, "Don't call me the king, and you know I'm not whoever you think I am." And then Jerry's like, "No, you are the king, and I want you to be the king." Like he wants that. Like he's like,
"We need you to be the king." Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for being such a great dude or whatever.
Exactly.
Because that's the whole point. Like it almost like gave Jerry a meaning to keep going. Yeah, this is fake and all that, but it kind of makes life worth living in this horrible apocalypse.
Yeah, because what else are they going to do? You know, he probably felt so fulfilled being like, what would you call Jerry under the king, like the right-hand man of the king? It made him feel like a sense of importance, a sense of duty,
yeah,
like there's some purpose he has. And I feel like a lot of the other kingdom knights or the kingdom people felt the same way. They're like, "Well, we love this because it makes everything worthwhile."
Yeah, and plus they had food and they had they survived where other people didn't. So, hey, somehow it works. you know what I mean? And then Ezekiel gives a speech. What did you think of the speech?
I think it was necessary, you know, and all the speeches are over the top, but
I don't think this one was too bad. It was okay. I mean,
it wasn't as bad as the last one.
And another edit scene, which was very critical and was spot on, was when the camera pans up and you see all the group hugging him, right?
Yeah.
And then they cut from that.
I love when they do that and they cut out.
And they cut out,
yeah.
and it switches right away to all the dead people. The same people that were hugging him are now dead, but on top of him.
Ah!
Isn't that beautiful? Like, perfect editing.
That was beautiful?
And in that scene, Carol is the outcast. You know, she's on her own. She's standing on her own.
She's like, "I'm awkward."
But she's the outsider, right? And in the other scene where everyone's dead, she's also the outsider because she's not part of that scene. She's somewhere else, right? So it.
Yeah. So she's not participating. And oh man, that my favorite scene in this episode has to be when he wakes up, but he has to crawl from underneath the bodies. Cause one, you think, oh my God, they're going to turn and eat him. Two, then they have all these cuts to like very, very graphic, gory details of what he's seeing of all the bodies of the people that stood up for him. There's holes in people with puddles of blood. Like, I did not expect that at all. It was so powerful.
And limbs.
Yeah.
That were blown off kind of thing. I mean, they didn't show us the brutality of the bullets. Like, they didn't do that part of it, but because they cut that on the previous episode, they cut it off at the end, right?
Mm-hmm,
but they showed us.
Oh, because you knew what was happening, right?
Yeah, they showed us the aftermath.
Right, and he's the only one alive. And he goes to everybody, and everyone's dead, and he like just lets out a cry because it's all his fault. He sees it all. He says he went from not losing anybody to being the only one that's alive. Not one, but everyone but one now.
Yeah, so this episode has a singular purpose, and it's small in scope.
It gives some character depth to Ezekiel because we haven't really had. It's been a while, at least, since we've got to see his growth. Mm-hmm. You know, so this is a really nice episode to kind of see him go from the king that we all were introduced to his reality being shoved in his face. You're like, look at yourself, you know. And I think this is a great turning point for his character. I wonder what he's going to be like now. It's kind of like he's like a Rick going through prison, you know?
I like the dragging where he was like, because he's injured and he can't walk and he can't even get up.
Right. Yeah. I liked that because it's like, oh my gosh, he has to flee from his own people. It's kind of like a revenge, you know, like this is what you did to us. Now now he has an army of undead people attacking him. And it's like, so there's no time at all. He has no time to process any of this.
I like how in the Walking Dead, your friends and people that were like you said, were with you.
After you. It's almost like your direct karma.
It's like a snap of your fingers and boom, the whole situation turns the opposite. Now, Daniel, who was a friend and a warrior together, now becomes a killer and an enemy. And Daniel gets shot in the head by Alvaro, the other guy who survived. Ezekiel has to shoot that mother with a flower in her hand.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to shoot her in the head, which was weird because he had I don't know where he got the gun. It only had one bullet in it. Whatever. But I know they were trying to make him look like he's in dire situation and he can't basically get out of it. They made him in a situation where like he picked up a gun and it didn't have any bullets. Like he couldn't do anything. He couldn't do anything, which is they made him like totally helpless, basically.
There's one person that's alive and it's like, oh yes, and they're still he still fights for him. Like he's like, our job is just to get out of here. Like he has more He's more grounded and in reality and still in the fight than Ezekiel is. This Ezekiel's starting his process of like, oh my God, this is all my fault and blah, 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 blah.
And of course, he gets shot in the back by this character. His name is Gunther,
which I didn't even know. I don't know why they even gave a name for this guy because I didn't know that. Did they ever say his name in the show?
No, it was just part of the online research that we did. He was basically a young Jim Carrey.
I thought he just looked like a pedophile.
Or that. He played his character really well because you hated the guy. Like, he was so friggin' annoying.
Like, slimy. Those glasses. Like, how did he keep his glasses throughout the whole apocalypse? Like, where do you find those?
His smiling teeth, yeah. You know?
And he seems to know so much about Ezekiel.
All the saviors know about everything. They talk. They tell stories around the campfire. About Ezekiel and the widow and
they
Rick.
They do research.
And Rick.
Right. So it's interesting. That's the only power they have. The whole war is taken by surprise. So that's kind of their only power they have is the emotional power to emotionally screw up their enemy.
Yeah. Again.
Which almost works.
Again, all the savior characters in this episode are evil. And they're even, as we see later on, they're even mean to each other. Like, remember when the guys were packing up the gun?
With Carol?
Yeah, but yeah, when they were packing up the gun, there's this the big guy who's walking down the hall. This guy's, you guys better get that gun packed up or else there's hell to pay. And he's like, oh. And
but like, it's like, chill, bro.
Yeah, and then even later, the guy, they sacrificed their own man.
Yeah, they're like, so, well, he made his bed, now he has to lay in it.
So, and then this Gunther guy is no different. He's evil and sadistic. So, again, the writers are painting all the saviors as these horrible people, which contrasts to what Jesus is doing by saving them, right, in the previous episode.
Right.
I'm still curious to see how that plays out. That's like one of those contrasting storylines that I don't... Are they going to... Again, I'm going back because I'm curious to see, are they going to make it like Jesus made the right choice? Or are they going to make it like Jesus made the wrong choice?
I mean, everybody has to have their arc, right? Everybody has to have their down moments. Maybe that's it.
The whole point of that, perhaps, is to flesh out Jesus' arc more and change him in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope it's not a horrible way. Like, someone we love dies. I hope not. But
someone's going to die. But maybe they won't because they know how bad we reacted to Glenn.
No, they don't care.
Yeah, they don't care. They did care. They wanted to kill him. Oh, so I filmed something on Wednesday, and it was a music video. And the director and producer, he's a pastor as well. And he was telling me, because I told him I was like a big fan of The Walking Dead, and I have a podcast and everything. He says that he plays basketball with Steven Yeun in Echo Park, I think around there, or somewhere in LA. And he's like, yeah, we play with him all the time. And he's really bad, but we don't tell him.
Because he's Steven Yeun.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought that was like a little funny thing there. Because he hangs around in LA a lot, I guess. He lives there.
Yeah, many actors do. And so do you. Was that dance video, music video that you said got canceled a few times?
No. I told him, like, you're going to have to pay me this much. You're going to have to pay me this much if you want me to come. Because
look at the big actress. You're going to have to pay me this much. You're stipulating your fees already.
No, I knew. Look, I knew. I got paid for the music video, too. Look, I knew I wasn't going to get paid because they're not serious about it. I'm like, look, this is I'm a professional actor. I got to be treated like a professional actor. And if you're going to cancel on me when I make plans and I take off work, I'm like, I'm missing an 8-hour day for this and you've canceled twice. Like, no, this is unprofessional. Like, no, I'd just rather you pay me or I'm not doing it. And they never got back to me. So that's fine. It's not a loss to me because I got bills to pay and I got a job. So it's not like it's the end of the world.
Right.
And something better did come along anyway.
Yeah. I mean, there's always going to be opportunities. I think you're going to do great.
Thanks, Dad.
You're welcome. But Ezekiel's not doing great. He's
segue.
He's and I think another reason why they had this Gunther character and that then meet up with Ezekiel is to further destroy Ezekiel's self-esteem and his whole being, right? Because Gunther keeps telling him all the things that are negative, and
it's almost like the voice in his head,
mm-hmm,
personified.
Right.
Yeah.
Gunther says to Ezekiel, that cat gave you everything, meaning Shiva, gave you an angle, a story. You played your cards good. You played your people good. They ate that horseshit right up. You take all that away, and what are you got? Some meaningless con man in a costume.
Yikers.
Yeah, so those are the things that are probably in Ezekiel's head as well. Like, I'm just some con man in a costume. And these are the things that all of us say to ourselves at some point in our life when we're doing something that's beyond our capabilities. Like, we're saying, like, who am I that I think I can be this person? I can do this.
Right.
Like, even things
you're doing. Yeah, we're our own worst critic, and we judge ourselves. We see ourselves as frauds. Like, he probably thinks of himself as the biggest fraud of all.
Yeah, like, we're not worthy of what we're doing. Like, for you, you're doing your acting, and you're trying to make it in acting, and you're like, well, who am I to deserve this? Like, who am I?
Right. Like, who am I to be able to say, like, you got to pay me this much, you know? Like, who really am I?
I know.
That's why we go to school and we get degrees to prove, and it's a physical manifestation of what we want to be. But at the end of the day, it's like, it doesn't matter what a piece of paper says or what other people say about you. It's how you feel about yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as bad as sending people off into battle, of course, but it's true that everyday things, that's why some people continue to live their life in a way that's less than what they can be because mm-hmm. they feel that they don't deserve to be something else. And I think this has a deep meaning of for everyone's life in that, yeah, you can be that as long as you believe it and you try and you do it, then you can be that thing that you want to be, regardless of what other people say. So this Gunther guy, mm-hmm. I mean, this whole episode is about tearing down Ezekiel. And if Ezekiel...
Yeah, ripping him back to his core.
And if Ezekiel can come back from that in the remaining season, then that would be like a growth. And it's like, okay, yes, regardless of what happened, regardless of all these people died, I did the right thing, and I was the person I was supposed to be, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
So that's hopefully what we're going to see. Because if we see him like completely destroyed and like, okay, I'm going to kill myself now, mm-hmm. then that would be kind of sad. I would rather see him grow from this. So that would be very powerful.
That's why I feel like his people will forgive him and actually say, yeah, we were all in on it, but it doesn't matter because you brought us here, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. And another act of Gunther, which I thought was very symbolic, is he took some blood. I don't know where he got that blood from, but...
Right. Probably from his own wound on his stomach. Yeah. Or was that before?
Yeah. No, it was after. And he put marks on Ezekiel's face, and he says, yeah. Delusions of grandeur.
Delusions. Gosh, this whole thing, I really think it was almost as if like Gunther was like his inner conscience, like outside, because he was accepting everything. He believed it. You know, it was just like breaking down, stripping him away one comment at a time.
Yeah. And I think the symbolism behind the blood on the face was like makeup. Like, you know how mm-hmm. an actor puts makeup on to become this other character?
They put their face on. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the blood was like, okay, here's your makeup, your mask that you were using to, you know, be this fake person. You know what I'm saying? So it was just another nail in the coffin.
They reached a chain fence. Yep. And that's when Gunther removes his costume, Ezekiel's jacket, to put over the fence, right?
He reveals that Negan wanted to have...
Yeah, all of them alive.
Yeah, and chained to the fence.
Mm-hmm. As if like, here lies the people that tried.
Right, yeah.
To take us down forever.
And we know immortalized. We know already that Negan puts people on the fence that were against him and all that. So we've seen it before. Like that other doctor ended up on the fence. But so I think Gunther was hoping that he would be someone important in Negan's eyes because he's bringing Ezekiel to him. Because earlier Ezekiel says, you know, Negan doesn't even know your name. You're a nobody. Mm-hmm. So I think Gunther thought, hey, if I bring Ezekiel, I'll be a somebody.
Right. Even though he's like, I'm Negan, you know, because that's what they've been brainwashed for. It's like a hive mind, but people are people and they want to rise to the top.
This whole episode is full of surprises, actually, if you think about right. it. There's a whole bunch of surprises we'll talk about later on, but this one was a surprise because when Gunther said, you can't climb over the fence, okay, well, maybe I'll just chop your head off. And then Negan, and he puts his sword on to Negan, sorry, to Ezekiel saying, you know, I'm going to chop your head. Him. And then you notice that Ezekiel, at that point, that was like kind of the final straw because he kind of mm-hmm. closed his eyes
and accepted his fate
and just laid back and said, this is it. Mm-hmm. And I think at that point is when he snapped and where Ezekiel snapped internally and said, okay, I'm not a king anymore. I'm just a guy. Because from that point on, that's when his character,
he started showing
his real self,
the new, yeah.
He mm-hmm. didn't talk like the king anymore. He talked in a regular voice. From that point on, he talked in a regular voice. So I think that was kind of the snapping point. Of course, the surprise is when Jerry comes out of nowhere.
Dude, that was so awesome. Because it was just, he just split in half. I was like, yes. And we finally get to see him use that axe. And I thought Jerry was dead. Like, I didn't see him. So I was like, oh no. I'm like, remember I always said, oh, look, he's going to die. I hope he doesn't die. He's the only like comic relief. And he comes in to the rescue. And then that's where we discussed, he's like, your majesty. And then Ezekiel's his true self comes out. He's like, don't call me Matt. Don't call me that. And then Jerry's like, dude, yes, I do. Gosh, he's so funny.
Yeah. Well, we saw Jerry use the axe in the previous episode where he axed one of the walkers in the head. in one scene, but it just split his head open, not his whole body, of course. And yeah. So it was kind of foreshadowing what his capabilities are with that axe, right?
Yeah.
But then in mm-hmm. this one, he kind of went into overdrive and was like, okay, this guy's going down.
Yeah, because he was about to kill his king.
They made that scene very satisfying because Gunther was such a douche, right?
Right, from the get-go.
And we're like, oh, I'm so glad this guy's dead.
Yeah. So they try to break the chain with the axe, and then we see that the axe breaks. So they stand side by side, and we get to see them fight with each other. And then Jerry says, thank you, Your Majesty, for being such a cool dude. And you put in the notes, Ezekiel sees a gun on one of the walkers, but he doesn't take it. But he does, Dad, because remember Carol hears the gunfire?
Oh, I see. Because they didn't show him use the gun. I guess we just heard it.
Right, because that's what draws Carol to that choice she has to make between getting the guns or saving her friends.
Mm. Okay, so he does use it. Yeah, so that was the whole scene of them where, because we this episode has two storylines that cross paths, right? We have Jerry and Ezekiel's storyline, and then we have Carol's, and they cross paths at some point. And then, of course, later on,
Rick and Daryl just wrap it up.
Cross paths as well as they zip by. We see Carol. I like the part where she is trapped next to the room where the gun is being torn down, and then she makes a decision. I thought she was, because she like closes her eyes and thinks, meditates for a little bit.
She's like, oh, here, I gotta go. I gotta access cyborg Carol. She's like turning on her alter ego.
Booting up the Terminator. Yeah. I thought she was going to go in there all Rambo and just kill them all. But she did something even
smarter.
Yeah, she stayed in the roof. And then
she just went upstairs. She's like, she shot him up from like the ceiling. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah, it reminds me of some scene that would have taken place in like either like a Sylvester Stallone Rambo movie or like Arnold Schwarzenegger movie where he's like, they're like in the roof, like with his hands spread out. Like,
they come down. Yeah.
Or they're like, their hands and legs are spread out and they're sticking to the ceiling. And then right, like,
I got Spider Carol.
And they come out of the nowhere. Like, they didn't go that far, but they had her in the roof tiles, which was, it was well done. But before they get killed, they reveal something about the plot line a little bit. Because the guy's asking them, oh, he says, is that all we got? Meaning, are these all the guns we have? And the other man says, there are others in the pool. This is just to tear them up. We got at least, and then before he finishes his sentence, Carol kills them. So they're implying that there's more guns.
Guns somewhere else. So even if they get the guns, it's not the last of them.
Yeah. So,
well, I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, the saviors have conquered so many different parts of the area, so they probably found like a military base full of stuff.
Yeah, and at the end where Rick and Daryl say, oh, let's find, because the guy's still alive, apparently, let's find out what he knows or something like that, they say, right? So maybe they're gonna interrogate him and find out where the rest of the guns is. We don't know, but that's a possibility. And I like also the little final touch where we hear one of the guys moaning like they're not completely dead. Mm-hmm. And then Carol just shoots him in the head and finishes him off. I like that little touch.
Yeah. Yeah, she's good. She's good. She gets the job done.
Yeah, I knew she would. I mean, Carol has finished that part where she's debating with herself, you know, what to do. I think she knows when she has to kill and when she doesn't. This shows again later where instead of fighting the saviors and getting the guns, she decides to help Ezekiel, which is an important moment. And of course, it turns out happy in the end, but it's still a moment where she had to make a decision.
Because that's at the core of who she is. She cares about people.
Right. Because the people are more important than the guns.
Right. And she knows that even though they are in war and the better choice is to go after the objective, she's felt this attachment to Ezekiel. And she can't do him dirty like that, you know?
Yeah, and also what would happen, I mean, she noticed he was alive, and once she knows that, she can't, like, if she didn't know, then we could say, well, right. She didn't know, but she actually
That's
sees.
Why the gunfire was important, because it made her, give her an opportunity to make another choice.
Yeah. And we see a scene where Carol is faking to surrender.
She's doing the old lady, like, I'm Carol.
Well, it was a callback to another scene in the previous season where she also faked out the saviors. The saviors mm-hmm. didn't talk about that, right? Well, I guess they didn't, because they weren't alive to talk about it. But where she also she surrendered as well, and then she shot him with a gun from her upper sleeve or
that
something.
That was so cool. I did not see that coming. All because all you see is them getting shot, and you don't see her firing. You're like, how the? I mean, you see her like smoking hand sleeve.
Yeah. So I was thinking to myself, how's Carol gonna get out of this one? And
right.
She had a knife. I thought, like, you know how when she hung the gun on the mirror of the truck, I thought she like mm-hmm. jerry rigged it somehow to like automatically fire when like someone came close. I don't know what she was doing there.
That's a little much.
Yeah, I was like, what is she doing? And then she got her trusty little knife that we've seen her for many seasons carry in her waist with the mm-hmm. special design. So she used that. And of course, we talked about how that guy got sacrificed. So yeah, so those, I always, when I see the saviors talking and reacting to each other and, you know, in different situations, I always envision if our group was in that situation, what would our group do? And our group, mm-hmm. meaning, you know, the quote unquote good guys, mm-hmm. like Rick and his group, would Rick kill one of his own people? No.
No, he would always try to find a way.
Yeah.
It's because the saviors have been conditioned to be like, we are all Negan. That means if we lose one, we're not losing any because we are all the same.
Yeah, hive mind.
There'll be another one to replace them. So that's the kind of, while it's efficient, it isn't effective because it makes them make stupid choices based on, oh, well, in the moment, we got to be irrational instead of waiting it out and seeing other options.
Yeah. So whenever I see a scene where the saviors are talking bad to each other or treating each other badly or even killing each other, I'm like,
it's for a reason.
If our group would never do that. Our group would never belittle or put down someone else, yell at them for not cleaning their gun or like not being efficient enough. Like,
no, they're like, okay, let me show you how to do it.
Yeah, let me help you. Let's work together.
That wouldn't even be a conversation.
Yes.
Let's share and be friends and sing kumbaya.
Yeah, exactly. And definitely not sacrifice one of their own people. I mean, come on.
Yeah, come on. And there's no loyalty.
Yeah. So it's clear where...
That's like paid mercenary work, you know? You can't... You're like a hired army. You can't... They're not loyal to anything but the coin.
Mm-hmm. And Carol did another cool Carol moment where she saw a button that was controlling the fence and she opened that. I'm surprised there's still power there. I don't know how that works. But
don't think about it too hard, Dad. Don't think about it too hard.
Don't think about it too hard. Okay. Somehow there's power. It's battery operated and there's a super battery. I don't know, man.
Well, it's their facility.
Well, maybe it is. Maybe they have generators. I don't know. So let's hear a little bit of Ezekiel and Carol talking. There's a reason why they did this flashback, because this is the point where their two paths cross and what they say is important, I guess, for the next scene, which is, you know, Carol saving Ezekiel. So let's listen to some of their chat.
And then at work, a 500-pound tiger needed my help. And as she bled, I did not just leap into her enclosure. I was not seized by any deep-seated instinct. They were only a few seconds that passed. But I deliberated. I thought about doing it. Weighing the risk of approaching such a beast. And I thought about not doing it. I stood there considering who I'd be in either iteration. And I decided I wanted to be the one who leapt.
And I played that because I like the word he used, leap. We see it later when Shiva helps saves him at the end and gets attacked by the walkers. And we have a sad Shiva dying scene. But Shiva leaped to save him just as he leaped.
Didn't think about it.
To save Shiva. And so Shiva did leaping as well. I like that word that he used, would be leap.
Yeah.
And then later on, he asks Carol about herself and all that. So let's listen to this part.
So many years later, Benjamin was the one who told me what I already knew but couldn't hear. If you're asked to be the hero, be the hero. I'm not ready. Finally, I've deliberated. I've made the decision on who I will be. Was it easier for you? Or have you always been this way? The strong, this brave? Or did you decide to be who you are today?
I decided. Just like you. But life decided some things too.
It does. It will.
So I mean, like she's saying she's just like Ezekiel, except that I think because she lost her daughter and because her husband was abusive, it forced her to change.
Right. Those were the things kind of that were decided for her, right?
Right.
So Sophia's death was a big moment that changed her, right? And then also her abusive husband and all that. So that was kind of life deciding things.
I don't know what she means by I decided to be who I am. Does she mean like she decided to no longer be in need of help instead of help others?
Possibly, yeah. But she made some decisions as well along the way, right? Like she did some evil things, like killing people.
She had to take other people's lives, and especially I think her big turning point for her was at Terminus, where she had to kill. She like was hurting that old woman and she pretty much, remember she was like covered herself in mud and like stuff and blew the propane tank at Terminus and pretty much saved them all from the train car.
Yeah, that was a big moment where she made a decision to be who she is. And she
knew what needed to get done, and she just decided that I'm going to be the one to do it.
Yeah. And she also did some things that had emotional impact on her, like killing Lizzie, for example.
Yeah. Yeah.
That took a toll on her because she was crying. And
because she had to kill a little kid.
Right. So those are the things that, and you know, they're similar in a sense to Ezekiel. And Ezekiel really, compared to Carol, hasn't really gone through much.
Right. Except, I mean, this is probably his beginning of the end, you know, like his beginning of his decline.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're comparable, but there's not a one-to-one comparison, but I mean, the him deciding to.
Yeah. Carol comes from a place of I've been there.
And I like the ending of that sentence where Ezekiel says, yeah, life forces things on you, and it will, meaning that there's more things that will happen in life that'll force things on. And that's a direct reference to what's happening now. Because this devastation of his group is a direct, is going to make a direct impact on Ezekiel. And this whole, all these deaths are going to have an impact on him. So it was very foreshadowing.
It's going to make him change and make decisions that are, well, it's always going to be, it's part of who he is now. He's going to carry that with him for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm. But yet again, I just thought of this. Remember when we first got introduced to the kingdom?
Yeah.
And I can't remember who was talking to Ezekiel, but Ezekiel said that, no, was it Ezekiel or someone else? But they were saying that they did, in the past, the reason why Ezekiel didn't want to join Rick with his fight was that in the past they went through a battle and they lost a bunch of people.
Right, and which was Benjamin's father.
Right, and Ezekiel says, I don't want to go through that again. So I'm wondering. I'm wondering if that's going to play a part into this.
Yeah, like, hope they bring that up.
Yeah, it's like I did this before, and now it happened again, and you know I'm done, kind of thing, you know.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see. But I just remember that was part of the story at some point. Okay, so Carol and Ezekiel's storyline merge.
Yeah, Ezekiel asks about the guns, and she says there's nothing we can do about it because she realized saving Ezekiel is more important than the guns. And then Carol smiles because she realized Daryl's on it. They're on it. They're not getting the guns to the sanctuary. And then this is where we go back to Carol, Ezekiel, and Jerry. They're walking, and Ezekiel is already feeling like, you got to leave me. This isn't going to work. I'm slowing you down, which is typical for people who are injured and feel like they've hit rock bottom. And he forgets that Carol and Jerry love him. They will never do that.
Yeah, and you notice that when he says it, he says it in his normal voice.
Right.
Again, mm-hmm. like I said, this right. is from the point this point on that he's given
drops
up.
Drops the act.
He drops the act, yeah.
Yeah, essentially. Carol's like, no, you don't get to do that. You don't get to pull that crap.
Which is a right? call, which is a callback to season one, because in the CDC episode, where the CDC blew up at the end, season one.
Yeah.
Dale says to...
Andrea?
He says, oh, you don't get to do that.
You don't get to just decide to sacrifice yourself. Like, right. no, you don't get to quit.
Yes. So that was a callback.
That easy. Yeah. Ooh,
and,
I like that.
And this season, they said that they were going to make a lot of callbacks to season one. So this is another one. What did you think of that scene where they walk into...
It was a chemical spill,
a
huh?
A pit of chemical spill. I think that was from the comics. I think there was a scene in the comics where they had to kind of match the comics.
Because all those walkers were gross.
Yeah, I don't think it had any specific plot point other than it just happens to be a spot where they just ended up falling in there. And then the big sacrifice with Shiva happened.
Oh, that was so painful.
Yeah, it
She's
was.
She's like, let me help her. But it...
Yeah, because it calls back to, as we saw in the flashback, where Ezekiel says, you know, I saved her. I jumped in the pit. I jumped in there. I leapt in and saved her. Now, Shiva leapt in and saved the king.
Him, and now he wants to...
Like, no. I think the graphics were done very well. Like, the Shiva jumped in, grabs a walker, and throws the walker out, which was kind of cool. You know, people were complaining online about, even on our Facebook page, that, hey, that's impossible. Those walkers can't take down Shiva.
But I mean,
well, that's fine. I'm accepting it because Shiva had to die at that point. It was part of the. It was a perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
Because Shiva sacrificed herself to save Ezekiel, and I think it was just perfect.
And like everything about him is stripped away completely now.
Right. He doesn't have Shiva because Shiva was a big part of his persona, right?
Yeah, it was part of the. It was like his props.
Yeah, and Gunther said that too. Hey, well, it's kind of foreshadowing. Like that cat gave you everything. It gave you a story. It gave you. So he kind of foreshadowed that. Oh, you have this cat. That was kind of your crutch, or like your not your crutch, but it helped you in your story, right? Now you don't have Shiva anymore. You have nothing. You're gone, man. You're nothing. You're nobody. You're just some guy.
You got your rock bottom. The only way to go is up, bro. That's all you can do.
You
got to
be another character. Be the real you.
Yeah, pick something else. Pick another story. Pick another actor, character for a play or something.
Now, this is one of those episodes. I think it was kind of the highlights of the season so far. I mean, we have lots more episodes to go, but this is so far one of the best ones as far as how they put the story together. They told the story of the fall of the king very well. And I like how Jerry says, "You're my king."
Oh, I love Jerry so much. He's so precious. Like, he's my favorite character because he kind of reminds me of me, like the goofy side of me, because I call everybody dude. I'm so chill.
And then we close off. They arrive back at the kingdom, like wounded with their tails behind their legs kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the contrasts are huge, right? Because like I said, speech, no speech. Shiva, no Shiva.
No more Shakespearean.
And they edited the same scene where they show him from behind walking towards his people, but this time... It's not to cheer them on. It's to say nothing and move away and leave.
Right. Right.
And then the closing scene is with him walking away from... People are just looking at like, where is he going? And he's just walking off into the distance like this little dot, little speck of a person. Yeah. Like he's a nobody. He's just this little person walking away. The visuals are like perfect. Like he was somebody, now he's nobody.
Yeah. Dang. Like the contrast is perfect.
I'm looking forward to see how Ezekiel's going to take this, because this is like the next chapter, you know, a big impact, but also an impact to, you know, his persona. Like, is he going to drop it? Is he going to maintain it? Like, what's he going to do? Mm-hmm. And then we have the Daryl and Rick scene. There's not much to say. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
So we said there was a surprise with Jerry. There was a surprise with Carol killing those saviors from the roof, from the ceiling. And the third surprise was Daryl running by. And I got to tell you, when I saw Daryl's motorcycle go by, I leapt from my seat. I was like, I was in the air. I was like,
you're so excited.
I was slapping the couch like, yes, yes, yes.
Finally, something's going right.
Daryl, yes.
And he was like on, he was like, like he was, that was so cool.
One of the most exhilarating scenes ever. Like,
yeah.
Cause I was like, ugh. And when Carol said, oh, they're not going to the sanctuary. I'm like, what does Carol know? Like, does she know something that we don't? But then I was like, oh, I know why, because they're not going to get there. They're not going to make it. Too bad. Yeah, I was jumping up. I almost hit the roof. And then it's like Daryl, and then they see Rick in his Jeep, and like, yes, the duo, the dynamic duo. Yeah, that was satisfying. Like I said, the only cheesy part was that Rick was swerving an automatic machine gun, and none of the bullets hit him in the face. And it was kind of lame, but hey, he's invincible. Rick's invincible. Come on.
I loved it. It was just like an action scene, something from like, I don't know.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, maybe?
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. They got their Jeeps, you know?
Even the scene where Rick, like, I didn't expect this. This was like, Rick jumped from his Jeep and into the other car, like, whoa.
I was like, I called it too. I'm like, he better jump from Jeep to Jeep. He has to. Like, you can't have a car chase like that and not jump over, you know?
I'm surprised they didn't do like a fight where like he's grabbing the steering wheel and then Rick's grabbing the steering wheel and then swerving left, swerving right, swerving left, swerving right. They didn't do any of that. I like that there was no hesitation, like, should I communicate with this person and convince them to surrender and make a deal?
No, screw that. This is war. We don't got time for that.
So he just stabbed him in the stomach. He's like, okay, I'm done. None of that previous episode stuff where it's like, we'll give you the Jeep and a full tank of gas if you tell us where the guns are.
No. Yeah, I think things just switched for him. I mean, like, because it was in the spot. They had no choice. There's no time to think.
Yeah. And then, of course, Daryl comes out from behind and shoots the guy from a moving motorcycle in the middle of nowhere. And, of course, that works, too. So here's the, like, the blooper or kind of the goof that I wrote down in the IMDb database.
Mm-hmm.
So when Rick jumps on the Jeep, he stabs the guy and then throws him out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he throws him onto the road, and then the Jeep veers off over the bridge and falls into the ravine or whatever.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, and then later we see surprise, Rick is alive, and he climbs up and he speaks to Daryl. And then at the end, after they talk, they say, okay, let's go see if this guy's alive. And then they walk forward towards the Jeep, implying that, hey, this guy's still in the Jeep, right? So that was kind of a goof because the guy's not in the Jeep. He's on the road behind them. That kind of the editing didn't look well. Maybe
they're talking about the guy who was on the gun in the back.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
You already submit the request ad on IMDb.
Well, they have to edit it, so they're going to either deny it or whatever. Yeah, so I was confused, like, which guy are they talking about? The guy they just threw off the truck? Well, Rick shot the other guy, so, sorry, Daryl shot the other guy, so it's a toss-up. Both are alive, so, or they could be dead. Who knows? Yeah, so that was an interesting scene. So we'll see where that goes, if they will discover that there's more guns and find out where the other guns are, because if there are other guns and they're at some other base that has not been revealed yet, then that's a problem too, because they could go to the sanctuary and kill all the walkers and set the sanctuary people free.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I totally believe that the moment, if our group wins, the people at the sanctuary will be more than willing, or, I mean, it'll take a while, but they'll be part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are under, like, they have no choice.
Anything else you want to add?
Just that I really liked the episode. And I hope I'm interested to see what the next one will bring. Maybe we'll get to go back to Dwight and see I want to see what's going on back at the sanctuary, because we've been focused on so much of the war from Rick's side that I want to see the war from the sanctuary side, because they seem to have caught on a little bit and now they have the upper hand. So I'd like to see what they do with that.
I saw some clips online that I didn't see a lot of the preview. I just saw some still images of Negan and Dwight and Simon and all those people. So I think they're going to go back to the sanctuary and find out what's going on there. I think it's about time, because Negan is stuck in a trailer with Father Gabriel So I hope it's just not the two of them monologuing for the whole episode.
Yeah.
But then again, we might get a Negan backstory. That'd be interesting, kind of. Yeah, right. So I think that's what's going to happen. Now, beyond that, who knows? There's no hint of what's going to happen in the future. So all mm-hmm. we can tell is, like, probably the next episode, we're going to see Sanctuary, and that's about it. Of course, we still don't know what has happened to the Garbage Pail kids.
Screw those guys. They ratted them out.
The Garbage Pile people. And we don't know also what's happened to Oceanside people. So we have a bunch of groups. We have two groups that haven't made their movements yet. Haven't made actions one way or the other. It could be that the Garbage people were so despised by the fans that they just decided to kill them off.
Cut them all together.
Leave them out. Or they'll bring them back and make...
After the war.
Make everyone groan again with their horrible linguistic tones.
Their new language.
I don't know. So we have our fan KJ that often leaves his voicemails. And let's see what KJ had to say about this episode.
After the cold open, I was thinking, I literally said out loud, this is going to be the best episode thus far. And I was right, because that cold open was amazing. It had all the things that, you know, could have made it go wrong, but Ezekiel's speech wasn't cheesy, and I was really not bored with the action that was going on, and it was dark, like how I like my Walking Dead. I knew that as soon as King Ezekiel's people sort of piled on top of him to protect him, which was totally awesome, that immediately we had a great little chase scene, the types that I love to see on the show. And of course, seeing that, you know, the transitions and the way that it was shot and the direction, I'm just glad to see that Greg Nicotero didn't direct this episode. That's all I'm going to say. And so regarding where we are, so like the relationships with the characters thus far, like, I'm really intrigued at how King Ezekiel sort of revealed himself to the audience and revealed himself to his people. And I want to see where he goes from here. Is he going to remain king? I hope he remains king, but just sort of tones it down a little bit, given the circumstances. And I'm sort of curious to see, like, what Carol does. Is she going to, like, step up as a leader in the community? Or is she going to become romantically involved with King Ezekiel? Is that going to help him return as king? Let me know what you guys think. Definitely am Team King Ezekiel. I'm really looking forward to see how they remix more of the comic book stuff, because they're doing a great job right now. And I'm just keeping my fingers crossed for this positive trajectory.
Yeah, so as far as Carol being romantically involved, I don't know. I don't see Carol doing that, because Carol's always been distanced with people, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if she will go that far being, like, as far as romantically involved, but I think she definitely will be. And I don't know.
She'll definitely be someone that will help him get back, because she's there. She was there. She believed him. I think she started to believe his cause and what he stood for. So I don't think that it would be skeptical to say that she will also be there to help him get back, or just to find out who he is now or who he should be now.
Yeah. And I don't think she'll be the new kingdom leader either, because I think Ezekiel definitely has solidified that role.
No. Yeah.
Ezekiel's right. Good. Ezekiel, whether he's his true self or the king self, will still be the leader one way or the other. I consider Carol is still an outsider who doesn't have the clout to be the kingdom's leader. Like, the people will not look at her as a leader anyway, because she hasn't done anything for them, really. You know?
Right.
She hasn't stood up. Like, she hasn't been part of that community over these years. But I think perhaps she will help
Ezekiel. She knows him better than anyone else.
But perhaps she will prop Ezekiel up and help him, but definitely not being a leader herself, though.
Yeah.
Thanks, KJ, for once again.
Yeah, thank you.
Leaving a message, and maybe we'll have him on the show again in the future as a co-host. So let's play another clip. Norman Reedus and Andrew Lincoln they showed an audio clip on The Talking Dead about the two of them joking with each other about the action scene. So let's take a listen to that.
I remember when Rick and Daryl are chasing Iago and Andy's doing his Indiana Jones from one car to the other car, and I'm following him on the bike, and he's got to do this thing where he goes, womp, womp, and then I go, wham, pow, 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 pow. I keep saying, Andy, stop hitting the brakes or I'm going to run into the back of the Jeep. And he's like, I'm not hitting the brakes. I would never hit the brakes. And then he'd go, well, hit the brakes. And I go, you know, and come, blah, 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 blah. So I almost ended up a bumper sticker on the back of his Jeep like 4 or 5 times because he's English and he doesn't know how to drive properly in America.
I think it's important that you all know this. Any pain that the guy has sustained in 8 years of being on this show is his own making. I'm remarkably coordinated, incredibly athletic. I'm used to driving on the left-hand side of the road. That is a fair point, well made, but I'm very safe. I'm a safe driver.
So that was
so funny.
That was Daryl Norman Reedus taking a jab at Andrew Lincoln about his English driving skills. But yeah, that's kind of the duo of the show that works so well together. It kind of reminds me of course, completely different shows and not the same characters, but like the original Star Trek or even the new Star Trek with Captain Kirk and Spock.
Right.
Like
yeah.
they're this duo.
Their relationship, they're like always at odds, but they're like the perfect team.
Right. They're kind of that duo that works well together on screen, the two guys.
Yeah.
Again, these are two characters that still haven't, they hinted in the previous episode that there's some kind of conflict morally going on there where Rick wants a little bit toned down and Daryl's goes in guns a-blazing. So I'm wondering if they're going to explore that even more in the rest of the season and play that out. Okay, so that's it for this episode. Like, we both liked it. I think it was great. Excited to see what comes up next. If you want to leave a voicemail just like KJ did earlier, you can call 1-844-893-4475. That's 1-844-893-4475 or 1-844-TWD-GIRL. And you can leave us a voicemail feedback and we'll play it on the air as well. In the past, we've given out Walking Dead Girl t-shirts to people who left voicemails. And we're still doing that. So if you leave us a voicemail, we'll send out a t-shirt to you in appreciation.
Well, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends and everyone you know. We love to get new subscribers. You can send email feedback to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And as always, this is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
Stay alive! To the